The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And hey, welcome back. Stephen Means joins us. He covers Ohio State. We've talked to Stephen in the past about the Buckeyes who have come back from the dead. They were written off after the Oregon loss in the second week of the season, and now they're a major contender. Stephen, thank you for the time. Great to have you back. So what's happened? How have the Buckeyes suddenly come alive and look like we thought they would look?
Yeah. Offensively, I think a couple of things happened. C.J. Stroud got comfortable, which was only going to happen with time. But you have to remember that this kid hadn't thrown a pass in college football into that Minnesota game. So he just needed to build some comfortability and some confidence there, and it seems like he's done that. But also, he's gotten healthier from whatever shoulder ailment that was, you know, hurting him those first couple of weeks and really impacting him as a thrower. So it starts there. You know, him getting healthy and getting more confident has allowed Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, and Jackson Smith, Njigba, and Jeremy Ruckert, and Travion Henderson, and that long list of weapons that Ohio State has on offense to basically, you know, put themselves in a position where they might be the best offense in college football. And from a statistical standpoint, they're up there with what LSU was in 2019 and in Alabama last season. And then defensively, obviously, Kerry Combs is no longer calling the plays. They've put that, that workload on Matt Barnes now, but it's more of a collaborative effort. He more handles the passing game as maybe a passing game coordinator on defense, while Larry Johnson, the defensive line coach there, handles more of the run game stuff. But stuff like that, they've also just figured out who their best players are. But yeah, a lot has changed in the conversation around Ohio State from where they were after the Oregon game, even after the Tulsa game, to where they are right now, where they might be the second best team in the country.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the defense, because friends of mine who follow the Buckeyes, I mean, they were angry. They were ready to throw this guy overboard, and obviously they threw him halfway. How would you characterize the defense right now?
I think it's good enough, and that's really all it has to be. I think that was always going to be the case this year. Can this defense be enough to not get in the way of what this offense wants to do? And over the last couple of weeks, they've done that. Yes, they've dominated at times, but it was Akron, it was Maryland, it was Rutgers. It was an Indiana team who was playing with a walk-on quarterback for most of the night. So they haven't played anybody yet to let you know if any of what we've seen over the last couple of weeks here is real for this defense. But if they're anything like that when they get on the field with Penn State on Saturday, or when they go to Michigan to play them or play Michigan State, or in a Big Ten title game, then this defense can clearly be enough to allow this offense, who has shown that they're going to put up 35 to 40 points on anybody, they can't get in the way of that. That's all it has to be.
Yeah, and Stephen, I don't want to bury the lead. You said it a minute ago in comparing this offense to the last two SEC champions, LSU and Alabama, and those are epic, historic offenses, I should say. Break this thing down for us, because, I mean, you mentioned a half a dozen players, and you still could add a few more based on what I'm seeing.
Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson are probably the best two wide receivers in the country, and we knew that coming into the season, or at least in that conversation. I think the big difference maker for them has been Jackson Smith, the Jigba, who has allowed this offense to be in a situation where they might have 3,000-yard receivers. They're all at 30-plus receptions, all over 500 yards, and all got 3 or 4 or 5 6 7 8 touchdowns this season, and we're only to the halfway point. So it starts there. But then Jeremy Ruckert is one of the better tight ends in the country, who, because he plays for Ohio State, he gets underutilized. That Indiana game where he had 5 catches and 2 touchdowns is one of the better games of his career, because he just got used more. But Travion Henderson, that kid, he's looking like the second coming of Maurice Claret out there. He's 4 touchdowns away from breaking Claret's single-season record for most touchdowns by a true freshman in Ohio State history. He's been everything he's been advertised to be and more as the former number one running back in the 2021 recruiting class. That's a lot of weapons. And now you're just asking a first-year starting quarterback who's getting more confident by the day and more confident by the game to just get these guys the ball in an efficient and a quick manner. And he's starting to do that. And T.J. Stroud has quickly turned into a guy who might break some of Dwayne Haskins' records and put himself in the Heisman Trophy conversation, which this is a lot of hyperbolic conversation, I know that, but that's just where this offense has maybe developed into. And it came down to, is C.J. Stroud going to be ready for this moment, and are these weapons going to live up to what their hype was? And that's happening right now.
Talking to Stephen Means about the Buckeyes, Stephen, you mentioned the Penn State game, but it's really later in the season that Buckeye fans, I think, are more concerned about, you know, whoever comes out of Michigan and Michigan State, and it's hard to believe we're even having this conversation. So give us the lowdown, the skinny on that game this Saturday in East Lansing, and who comes out of it and what it means to the team you cover.
Yeah, I think with Michigan State more than Michigan, we're going to find out what's real. I know some people think Kenneth Walker is one of the favorites for the Heisman Trophy because he's 3 yards away from 1,000 yards in his first year there, and Peyton Thorne has looked pretty good, and they've got some quality wide receivers there as well, you know, and Jalen Reed, Jalen Naylor, and Trey Mosley. So they've got quality weapons as well, but Michigan State hasn't played anybody, and this will be their first time playing against a team of where the talent is equated a little bit. So we're going to find out a little bit if what we've seen the first couple of weeks here is real for Michigan State or not, or if it's just they're taking advantage of a favorable schedule. While with Michigan, the question every single week is going to be, is Cade McNamara still going to be the starting quarterback by the time they play Ohio State? Because right now, Michigan is very run-heavy. They're pretty much one-dimensional, and they've got a lot of running backs led by Blake Corum there. But Cade McNamara is not going to be the guy who's going to put up the necessary points to beat Ohio State. But they do have a true freshman five-star quarterback by the name of J.J. McCarthy, who might be that missing piece of this offense that allows it to not be so one-dimensional. So as every week goes by, that's the only question that's on the mind for Ohio State fans as they watch Michigan play is, okay, can Ohio State stop the run? But more importantly, is J.J. McCarthy ever going to be Michigan's starting quarterback this year? So that's something that needs to be watched for. Is Michigan State real? We're going to find that out. Are they really the number eight team in the country, or has this all been just a little fraudulent? While with Michigan, it's how many more weeks until Jim Harbaugh understands that J.J. McCarthy is going to have to be the quarterback that plays if they want to compete with Ohio State?
And finally, the question that may start getting answered next week and in the ensuing weeks, and that is a conundrum that occurs if Oregon and Ohio State are vying for one of the four spots in the college football playoff. You saw the game. You know what happened 8 weeks ago. What do you hear from the fans of Ohio State about that question?
Yeah, I think we're going to learn a lot from these first, you know, playoff rankings that come out next Tuesday, what the committee actually cares about. Because, yes, Oregon came to Columbus and they beat Ohio State, and Ohio State didn't look good on either side of the ball doing it. But also, Oregon's team has fallen apart because of injuries, and they just haven't played that well since. While Ohio State, and the team that lost to Oregon that weekend, is nowhere near the team that we've been watching the last couple of weeks here. C.J. Stroud looked like a deer in headlights in that game. Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, and Jackson Smith-Njigba racked up stats, but that's just because they threw the ball 54 times that game. The offensive line didn't block well. The running backs didn't move well. The defense couldn't stop anybody, and they looked lost at times. That's not what we're looking at with this Ohio State team right now. It's to the point that we all kind of know if they got on the field together right now, Ohio State would probably win that game pretty convincingly. So these first rankings that come out next Tuesday are going to let us know what the committee thinks. Are they going to value the fact that, yes, from a resume standpoint, Oregon came to Columbus and they won a game? Or does it matter, you know, how teams look right now and who actually might be the better team? Because the answer to that is two different things right now.
Well said. Stephen Means joining us. Hey, thank you, Stephen. Good to have you on. We'll talk soon. You be well.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff. Interesting. I mean, Ohio State is one of the most interesting teams out there because of some of the things that Stephen laid out. We're heading to a break. More of your phone calls. Matt Stinchcomb in 20 minutes. Stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Joseph is up next in Tupelo, Mississippi. Hello, Joseph.
Hey, Mr. Paul. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call again.
Thank you.
How about this past weekend? It was so electric in Oxford, wasn't it?
I always love going there, but there was a sense I haven't felt in a number of years, and it was really fun to be there.
Yeah, it felt sort of like 2014.
It did.
Whenever we had game day there for Alabama. But also, I was going to say, I know this Auburn game, I'm looking forward to it, but I am a little bit nervous because, like you said earlier, Auburn is unpredictable. And it's going to be a tough game, and it all depends. And also, they're going to have the home field advantage. And I was just going to get your thoughts on that.
Now,
but
listen,
also,
I think Ole Miss is ready for this. I mean, they've been to Alabama. They've been to Tennessee. As great an atmosphere as you get at Auburn, it won't be anything that the Rebels aren't used to. But I'm continually worried about the health of this team. And because I remember in talking to Kiffin a couple of times last week, I mean, he's got a beaten down team. They need a break. And this is a really brutal run right here.
It is. That's a fact. And I mean, but I'm hoping if there's some way that we can stay healthy and everything come out right, we run the table. I'm just wondering, what is it going to take with those decent wins that we'd have on the season? I mean, I'm already ranked 10th to somehow squeeze in that fourth spot.
Listen, my answer will be clinical here. I would simply say don't be concerned about that yet. because I'm not optimistic. But I don't know what's going to happen over these next 6 or 7 weeks, just like the first 8 have been the most unpredictable we've ever encountered. So I know Kentucky fans want to bring that up. I know Ole Miss fans. It's good. Listen, when you're in a position to ask about making the playoff, it's great. We heard it from A&M fans last year, but I'd go to Auburn first and be concerned about the Tigers. David is up next. Hello, David.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Got a question for you. In the next few weeks, if things go south at Alabama, who do you think, or where do you think, your opinion, Coach Saban will? Because friend or foe, Golden's got to go if things go south there. So where do you think Saban would look to replace him?
Well, this is just me free associating. I think his first choice, and I don't know if his first choice is going to be permissible, but I would think he would want Jeremy Pruitt back.
I was thinking that myself.
Yeah. And by the way, Jeremy Pruitt, all the things we said about him as a head coach – are not applicable to him as a defensive coordinator. He's a phenomenal defensive coordinator. The only thing I just don't know where Jeremy Pruitt is going to be at that point from a hireability standpoint. I mean, think about Hugh Freeze. I realize Hugh Freeze was a head coach, but I still don't think Hugh Freeze can get hired in the SEC. And this is just an opinion here, but don't focus on his fall from grace because of what happened with the phones. Think about the NCAA issues. And I don't know where and the fact that Pruitt is still continuing to fight with Tennessee probably won't help it. So, you know, can he pass the test? Don't forget, Hugh Freeze. Now, I can tell you, I asked the commissioner point blank, did you stop Hugh Freeze from being hired at Alabama as offensive coordinator? He said no. And he's telling the truth, but that doesn't mean that his office encouraged Alabama to look elsewhere. And the reason why they were doing that was because they didn't feel like it was fair for Freeze to be coaching at Alabama, Missouri, or anywhere else while the program he left behind was ineligible for postseason. Now, we don't know the disposition of the Tennessee case. I know that was a long, highfalutin. Well, it wasn't that highfalutin, but that was a long answer to your question. Thank you. Bo is in Pawleys Island, a place I would like to be permanently. How are you?
Paul, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. What's going on?
Well, I'm sitting out on the dock overlooking the intercoastal waterway. It's about 75 degrees.
You're making
no
me
humidity.
Jealous.
Kind of beautiful day. And, Paul, just a quick question for you. When a team has been penalized, or is it penalized or penalized?
It's a good question. It depends on penalized is a nice way of saying it. Penalized just seems
penal
dirty
code.
To me, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like a penal code. Anyway, Paul, my question is, how many years does Georgia have to go and be penalized or penalized for playing in Jacksonville? Well,
you know, by the way, you know what's interesting? I'm gonna become a professor here for a second.
Okay.
I mean, what is the definition of penalized or penalized? I mean, it derives from the word penal, does it not?
Yeah. I don't know the answer.
You don't get sent to the penal farm. You get sent to the penal farm.
Exactly.
Here's the answer to your question. And I don't know if he's on our show Friday, and I really don't care. But I've sat with the mayor of Jacksonville, I think, 5 straight years, Lenny, whatever his name is, telling me how great this game is. And then I talk to Mike Griffith every year, who tells me it's a disaster for Georgia because they can't recruit.
Yeah.
I don't really know, because I am not a historian of the Florida-Georgia
game. Let me ask you a question.
But I know how Georgia fans feel about
it. Quick question. Gainesville is 74 miles from Jacksonville.
Okay.
Mercedes-Benz Dome is 72 miles from Athens.
Right.
Georgia gets penalized every other year. They can't recruit. They're the only team in the country for 1 week that they can't bring recruits. So, I mean, it's a no-brainer. The SEC wins either way, right?
Now, I do like the atmosphere around a game like this, but I hear you, and
it's a tough question.
Remember the former Georgia athletic director Greg McGarrity is now working down there for the Gator Bowl committee. I don't know if that helps or not. I don't think it does.
But I don't know.
I thought it was interesting that
Josh
Brooks, the AD at Georgia, who we had on the other day, has been very coy. And I think that's going to be a big issue down the road. Kirby has been circumspect on that. And we will get you the official definition, penal versus penal, in just a few minutes. I promise you, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm just trying to be literate. Justin is up next. So hello, Justin.
Hello, Paul. How you doing, sir?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Well, a big Tennessee fan, I thought that they fought pretty good, at Alabama. And then, do you think that we can beat Kentucky?
I think Tennessee could beat Kentucky in Knoxville. I'm not sure they can beat them up in Lexington. And the other, I just got through talking about Ole Miss. Another concern I have for Tennessee is this has been a difficult run. Ole Miss, Alabama, Kentucky. That's a very tough combination. Of course, let me add that there's a bye week this week, so forget exactly what I just got through saying. I misread the date of the game. Yes, I ask me in a week. I think the fact that there's a bye week. How about this for catching my breath? I think because of a bye week, they have a reasonable chance to win up there. How about that?
Yeah, that's what I was feeling too. And I know the line. What was crazy to me is, it's Tennessee by 7 at Kentucky. I mean, that's just right now, but
yeah, don't pay attention to that. So, I'm glad I corrected myself, because I was thinking the game was this weekend, but of course it's not. Thanks for the call, appreciate it. Logan is in College Station. You're on the air. How are you, Logan?
I'm doing pretty good, Paul. I just wanted to call and let you know and ask you what your comments about my views of Jimbo Fisher ending Nick Saban's dynasty at Alabama. What do you think?
Oh, is it over? I didn't realize that.
Oh, it's over. It's long gone.
Well,
Paul.
Here, let me offer this. If for whatever reason Nick Saban never wins another national championship, then you are going to be correct. If the program trails off, and that is going to be a line of demarcation, a point of reference, an inflection point, all the cliches that you want to throw out there. But until we know that, it's impossible for me to offer that, because if Alabama, you know, rolls into Atlanta in 6 weeks and beats Georgia and wins a national championship, that game is just, it doesn't matter. It matters in terms of, you know, we don't have to ever see that stat about Saban versus assistant coaches, former assistants. But I remember 10 years ago next week covering the biggest regular season football game I have ever seen. Regular season. It was the game of the century. For 8 weeks, that's all we talked about. Now, I was hosting a show in Birmingham, so make sure you factor that in. Every day, Alabama versus LSU. It was epic. LeBron James was there. Robert Kraft was there. Every famous player that had ever played at Alabama and LSU was there. And Alabama lost the game in overtime, and it was the most deflated stadium I've ever seen. It was over. And about 8 weeks later, Alabama beat the same team for the national championship. Just think about that as we head to the break. Matt Stinchcomb is up next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Matt Stinchcomb joining us here courtside, well, actually studio side. Matt, let's talk about there's a couple two really big games this weekend. Let's start in Jacksonville. Seems like that's a pretty good place to go. Yeah. And you know, I keep asking people to make a case for Florida. I want your assessment of the Gators, and you know, I know it's a rivalry game, but how do they match up right now to what we see on the other side?
They don't match up great. I mean, it's especially given the way they played recently, right? You know, last time out, given that, you know, LSU finds their run game to the tune of like 321 yards or something on the ground, and they hadn't done that. I don't think they've been in triple digits all season rushing, but two other times. And you look at Georgia, where, so who's in at quarterback? It won't matter much if you can't play run defense better than the Gators did versus the Tigers of LSU. I do think, though, that there is opportunity. Absolutely, there's opportunity. And I do think that the head coach and play caller at Florida is a really good play caller. And I think he can scheme offense very well. And you look at last year, and you would think that losing Kyle Pitts during that game would be a pretty significant shock to their offensive system. And yet, they still persisted. Now, Kyle Trask at quarterback, and there was certainly a comfort level there in the passing game that they had long since established in that year. They haven't done that this year, especially at quarterback. There is not a comfort level at all. It's different. It's totally different from what Georgia has at quarterback, in my view, in that at Florida, it's sitting there going, you know, which one of these guys do we have to put out there first, so to speak? Which one of these guys are we going to have to go with? Whereas Georgia, it's more of a luxury, which is, I don't know, you're winning with this guy. You could win with the other guy. He's been on the shelf. For Florida on offense, they're going to have to – I think Dan Mullen's going to have one of, if not his best performances as a play caller to put not only his quarterbacks in a position to succeed, but also the balance of that offense. And he's done that before. We've seen him do that before. He's had a week in the bye. I do think it's more difficult if he hasn't established, I'm going to do that in and around this guy at QB. And I don't know that he's been afforded that opportunity or created that opportunity to be that definitive that this is going to be the guy we're building our game plan around.
Let's talk about this bye week. And you know, you've been in this game, obviously. And you know, how does this week go? Because not this week, last week. I mean, it seems like there's such a big game that, you know, at what point do you finally just flip the switch?
Yeah, I think both these teams were already pointed towards this game. No coach will ever admit to that. And no player will probably acknowledge it either. But they know. And it's, I think both coaches have said, I know Kirby said, you know, the rankings, and this isn't about rankings. And it isn't about rankings. And yet, you can't ignore the fact that one team's number one in the country right now. And we've seen, you know, the way history plays out, and you throw the record books out in a rivalry game. That almost holds up in this one, though, when you have an undefeated team coming into this game where they oftentimes do not come out undefeated on the other side of this game. It definitely gives you pause. But it's been, you know, a distinct departure one from the other from a trajectory standpoint. When you look at the respective programs, I mean, as these numbers would indicate, where Georgia clearly on a upward bending line, so to speak, whereas Florida, they've been kind of sputtering, to say the least. I don't want to say plateaued. Last year was anomalous, I think, in a lot of ways. The defense was not great. The run game was not there. And you were that superlative in the passing offense where you won a bunch of games if you're Florida, but it was not a balanced team. And it doesn't seem to be a very balanced team this year either.
It's convenient and popular, and I don't know what else, because you're an analyst and I'm just a talking head, to criticize Todd Grantham.
Yeah.
When you see them play and you've done their games and you've watched them, what are you seeing from him that you think makes people so antsy?
You know, I think part of it's informed by how other they were offensively a season ago. If it weren't for Alabama, you're looking at what Florida did offensively last year and you're going, that was a singular performance. That was an unbelievable offensive performance with a guy at quarterback that no one was talking about and a guy in Kyle Pitts who people in the league certainly knew about, but nobody nationally was paying attention to Kyle Pitts. And yet they built this offense that was, you know, second only to Alabama, quite literally and figuratively in that regard. And then so in contrast to that was this underperforming defense. You could say that. I would say that again this year from a statistical standpoint, yes. But when you look at some of the attrition and the absences that they've endured, which, you know, everyone's going to say, hey, look, you're banged up. Everybody's banged up at this point in the season. They've been banged up for a while, and I don't know that they were equipped from a personnel standpoint to endure a whole lot of hits from their frontline players. Kyrie Elam going out, that's bigger, I think, than just his position, because you get into some of your sub packages and it changes how you would allocate that secondary. And so because he hasn't been available, that changes the way that you can deploy in the back end. So it's not an excuse, it's a reason. It is a real reason. And is it concerning? I would have to say that it is, but only in that now you've got an offense that has returned to earth. And because of that, you don't have that padding, so to speak, where it might gloss over some of your defensive deficiencies. But, you know, part of it's also a function of having an offensive-minded head coach. And we've seen that with most teams where, even at Auburn, right, with Gus Malzahn, offensive-minded head coach, they were winning games with defense. They weren't winning it with their offense. And they have not really, since Nick Marshall was there, that you could say, man, this Auburn offense is really up on its skis. But they were so good defensively that they were still finding ways to win games. And you think, you know, Bo Nix, he goes in there, wins the Iron Bowl, and it's certainly not because that offense was unstoppable. It was a good defensive football team. But because you have an offensive-minded head coach, I do think that oftentimes, and in an offensive-minded game, defenses are easy to, I think, not vilify, but almost point towards as, you know what, not only is a defensive struggle game boring, but also is if you give up points and we somehow lose in an offensive game, that somehow, you know, those are the guys that catch the most bullets, it feels like. Part of it's, I think, just where we are with the game right now.
Final thought before you go, the Auburn game, What do you make out of Auburn at this point? Because they have a chance to really make a lot of noise these next few weeks.
They certainly do. I mean, really, when you think about it, the teams that could finish with either no losses or one loss, Auburn's the one that's going to determine that based on the balance of the season. It's how you play against the Auburn Tigers that will determine whether or not you finish with one or none, and that, you know, including obviously Alabama with a one loss already. The Iron Bowl looms large. It'll be interesting to see how good they can be at the end of the season. I don't know. You know, you look at them, and they're a strobe and fade kind of a team where you don't see consistency, especially on offense. And yet, post what, Georgia State, it does seem as if they've stabilized, at least from a who's going to be in there, so to speak, especially at quarterback. But, you know, in year one under Brian Harsin, in my view, relative to what should have been their record last year, because they had three wins that easily, one certainly should have been a loss. So it's a false comparison, so to speak. I think Auburn is ahead of schedule, and you know, Auburn fans might not want to hear that, but I do think that they are, and they play a pretty significant role in how that SEC West race, not the race to the top necessarily, although it could, but how the pecking order ends up at the end of the season. You know, it kind of hinges on, you know, how well you play versus Auburn.
Yeah, they have Ole Miss, they have A&M, and obviously Alabama later on. Matt, thanks so much.
Yeah, always fun, Paul. Thanks for having me, man.
Matt Stinchcomb here on these Tuesday night conversations, and we are heading to the break. Back with more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's talk to Jim in Texas, who is up next. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, Paul, thank you for taking my call. I was calling about that Logan from College Station and his predictions. He's talking about, brought up Johnny Manziel won the Heisman Trophy, beating them in 2012.
Right.
They did. But one thing he left out about that year also was Alabama went ahead and won the national championship that year.
They sure did.
Yes, sir. And if Joe Paterno coached until he was 84 years old, the country's going to be in really upset if Nick Saban decides to do that. I'm just saying, Paul, I appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah, listen, I hope he coaches to 84. He would.
I do too.
He would certainly inspire. Too. Yeah, and that's the thing that I think a lot of people don't understand. When you're doing what he's doing at 70 or 75 or 80, it inspires a lot of people because you know we're almost programmed to think in this country that you reach a certain age that. You're not able to do anything any longer, and I think some of that causes because there are mandatory retirement ages, but you know, 55, 60, 65, depending on you know where you work.
Well, he's in good shape, Paul. Yeah. He takes care of himself. He's healthy. He's not there for the money. He loves what he's doing.
No, you're right. I saw. I was talking to him 2 weeks ago when we were in Tuscaloosa, and I'm like, looking, this guy. I mean, I said this earlier, but yeah, you know, I covered Coach Bryant. Now again, I was 24 years old, and you know, people 50 look like they were ready for a mausoleum at that age. But yeah, I mean, you try to be objective about how somebody looks, but you know, I compared him to a lot of other people that I have known at 70, and he looks pretty amazing. And
well, to Logan, Paul, we'll give A&M a game every 9 years. So
hey,
that's okay. That's my ex-father-in-law was an Aggie, so that's okay.
I hear you. I understand it now. How about Richard in Madison, Mississippi?
Hey, good afternoon, Paul.
Hey, Richard.
I wanted to ask you about your comments you said about Hugh Freeze a while ago.
Right.
See if I read them right. That you kind of went down the road just thinking that the way I heard it was you believe he kind of has a death sentence, at least in the SEC as a head football coach. Can you kind of steer me what you were trying to say?
No,
do you think he has a death sentence?
Let me make it clear here. I know people know how I feel about Hugh Freeze. We've been friends, and I think a great deal of him. And I think he would be phenomenal at a lot of places. What I was trying to represent there is how I think it is viewed from a different level. And I'd have to see it to believe it before I see Hugh Freeze in this conference. And because I've seen too many jobs go by where he was clearly the best choice and he didn't get an interview.
Yeah, I agree. You know, last year at this time, there were so many openings, you know, coaches' jobs open, and his name was brought up in literally every single one of them. And I thought, well, there were several places that I thought he would end up.
Well, yeah, there were three or four openings in the SEC, and I'm, yeah, I don't want to, you know, embarrass anybody by saying he was a better choice than this guy, but he's proven it. Nick Saban had hired him to be the offensive coordinator until he found out he couldn't. So that shows you what Nick Saban thinks of him, and he had six or seven offers, I believe. Now, I can't answer for Hugh Freeze. I mean, I've heard his story. Yeah, I tend to believe him when he talks, but others don't.
Yeah, I'm a huge Hugh Freeze fan. Obviously, I'm from Mississippi, so I wish him the very best. I do have one other question for you, though, not regarding that. And thank you for that info, by the way.
Sure.
Just for instance, if Georgia ends up beating Alabama in the SEC championship game and essentially eliminates Alabama from the CFP, any idea how that might get filled from that point on? Because I think it'll be somewhat very predictable after that, if that happens, you know, who our national champion football team will be.
Yeah, I think that is the de facto national championship. Because I think right now Alabama is still that good. I mean, Alabama is a flawed team, and they're still in the same conversation with Georgia. So, yeah, I think we're thinking the same way. Hey, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you. Let's check in with Norman, who is in Florida. Hello, Norman.
Hey, Paul, this is Norman Barwick. I watch your program, you know, constantly, and I really enjoy it. And it enlightens us on a lot of things that we wouldn't know if it wasn't. We're just little seafood people on the West Coast, and I'm a diehard Gator fan. Been through the bad times as well as the good times with them. And I took and been listening for about 3 weeks.
Yeah, I'm here.
And been listening to them the last 3 weeks about Dan Mullen. I'm a Dan Mullen fan because he took something that wasn't nothing and he turned it around. And if he's listening, I'd like for him to know us people over here on the West Coast, we on his side. And, you know, maybe somehow, you know, we could just keep the ship going where it's at. Because we think he's done a good job. They might be liking it in some places. But, you know, I think he's done, you know, a very good job if they'll stick with him. And I appreciate you taking my call.
I don't think anyone is replacing Dan Mullen right now. I think there's some angst from the fans, but that's understandable. These Florida fans are not a forgiving bunch. Hey, I appreciate the call. I want to make it clear. I think the question I had for Stinch was about Todd Grantham, who seems to be the one that people want to see replaced. I've yet to hear anybody wanting to see Dan Mullen replaced as a Florida head coach. Now, Saturday could change some opinions. We are heading to the break here. More of your phone calls and a few more guests right after this.